Stephen Mayne, are you a big tennis nut?
Oh, look, I used to play for 4 days a week, man, for 20 years, actually. Yeah, I used to play...
Take that as a yes, then.
Too much, yes. I did beat Wayne Arthurs in my youth a couple of times.
You would have had a big serve.
Yeah, not much else, though. I had the big swinging lefty serve, so I was a bit like Wayne Arthurs, the big serve. But then I couldn't volley. That was my fatal flaw. So did a bit of coaching, and but then journalism took over, and that was it.
Could you turn quickly? Were you good at
No, I was, when you're 6 foot... When you're 196 centimetres, you're sort of the lumbering, Bruce Reed, sort of a slow, praying mantis sort of flailing around the court. So
nice haircut.
Yeah, it's a bit savage. I'm a four times a year man. So you go in there and just get the job done.
Being as ruthless as BHP have been today.
Well, they've had 6,000 jobs, Sean. It's only 6% of the global workforce of 100,000. But look, it's savage. I mean, I think today, I was just reflecting before that I came in here last year into this very box to speak to Lindy. And on that day, the market had crashed by 7%, which was in points terms, it was 408 points, which was the biggest points fall in since the 87 crash. Mm. And then today, here we are back in the box again, and I think this is actually the worst day of the global financial crisis today. And you're seeing it at two levels. You've got the jobs in Australia.
How amazing that the most amazing thing could be happening and the worst thing at the same time.
It is. I mean, it was almost like the market just fell away as President Obama was speaking. I mean, it just finished up more than 300 points down the American stock market. And what was absolutely incredible about it was the banks, the American banks. The big nine American banks, who were all bailed out by the government last year, $100 billion bailout, the strongest, biggest American banks. Last night, Inauguration Day, they all fell by between 16 and 59% in percentage terms. So US $76 billion was wiped off the value of the big nine American banks last night, such that if you rate the big four Australian banks and what they're worth, our big banks would rank, Westpac would be fourth, Commonwealth Bank would be sixth, National Australia Bank seventh, and ANZ ninth, if you line them up against the big nine American banks. So their banking system is so crippled that little old Australia, which is 1/30th the size of their economy, our four big banks, strongest banks in the world, are just as valuable as their big name banks, which all fell on average by more than 20% last night.
How related to the administration are the banking fortunes? Or is it a separate economy, the political economy and the financial economy?
Well, I guess it started off as a financial crisis triggered by a falling housing market. And then what we've seen is basically a global financial collapse like we haven't seen since the Great Depression, which has therefore triggered a global crisis of confidence. And I guess...
But is this the market not reacting well to the changeover between Bush and
Obama?
I think it's
nothing to do with it. The trigger was actually those silly Scots at the Royal Bank of Scotland announcing £27 billion in write-downs, which will be the biggest loss in British history. Previously, Vodafone had managed to lose £15 billion. And the fact that the UK government announced they'd be taking over all the rotten loans on their banks' balance sheets, which could be up to 500 billion Australian dollars. So this caused a run on the pound, and the pound crashed. You can get, the pound only buys $2.10 now. Remember the days when it used to be, $3 to get a pound? Well, the pound is crashing. There's been a bit of a run on the pound and basically another iteration of the global banking crisis, which then played out on Wall Street with all those, JP Morgan down 21%, Bank of America 29%, et cetera, et cetera.
What about David Jones?
Well, I guess that's the flip side of the coin of where the financial crisis is turning into a real economy crisis. And one of the sectors which is most exposed is the retail sector, where retailers are relying on debt-dependent consumers. So they're relying on consumers to borrow money to spend, and credit's sort of getting pretty scary. The headlines are spooking everyone. So David Jones has cut 150 jobs today, and we've seen Australia's biggest discount retailer go bust yesterday, which is the group that runs Crazy Clarks and Golos and chicken feed and all these sort of stores. They've got 2,700 staff. So they've actually called in the administrators. Harvey Norman is closing stores. And Westfield, which is the world's biggest shopping centre company, their shares has fallen another 5% today, down to a record low since they did their big merger in 2003. So their shares are down to $11.79. And to the point now where Westfield is now valued by the stock market at $6 billion less than what it claims it's worth. And never before has that happened to Westfield, which is the world's best and biggest shopping centre developer. So Westfield claims they're worth $29 billion. The market's now saying $23 billion. And that's because stores are closing, jobs are being lost, people aren't spending, and we need something to turn around confidence. And hopefully that can be Barack Obama.
What did I hear this morning on the news that banks weren't having the lending capacity, that they couldn't actually get loans? Can you explain that story to me? You're nodding, so I haven't got the story completely wrong.
Yes, it's Australia relying on foreign debt, highly dependent on foreign debt. And we've got, I think it's about $75 billion of foreign loans which are due to roll over in the coming year. And because the foreign banks are fleeing, the big challenge is how we can get our big strong banks to step up and take on literally over the next 2 or 3 years hundreds of billions of dollars of loans. So as strong as our banks are, there is basically an overall cash shortage in Australia because we are so dependent on foreign capital.
Stephen Mayne is with me in the commentary position. We're just watching some players warming up for the evening session here at the Rod Laver Arena at 17 minutes to 6. It's my duty to tell you that the Country Fire Authority are concerned about a fire in Langwarrin, Parkland, near Pindara Boulevard. The spokesperson says it's close to houses, and that is a very great concern. There are 17 appliances in attendance. Water bombing from the air. We'll bring you more information as to what is going on there on 774 ABC Melbourne. Just to repeat, there is a fire in Langwarrin, Parkland, near Pindara Boulevard. Close to houses, apparently 17 appliances are in attendance and there is water bombing occurring from the air. More information as it comes to hand on 774 ABC Melbourne. Stephen Mayne, resources bubble you're pointing to.
Yes, the resources bubble. I think we have had a very interesting development today where BHP, the world's biggest miner, has released their latest December quarterly production figures. And as part of that, they've announced this 6,000 jobs to be lost, including more than 3,000 in Australia, primarily in Western Australia and in Queensland. Now, what is interesting, I think this is symptomatic of the challenges for Australia, because we've had a commodities resources bubble. And if you look back at the BHP profits over the last 6 or 7 years, you can see how that bubble has manifested. Back in 2002, 2003, BHP only made US $1.9 billion in profit and their revenues were US $17 billion. Last year, 2007-08, they made a record US $15.4 billion. So that was, you know, that's $24 billion Australian dollars in profit after tax. That's after they paid $12, $13, $14 billion of tax globally. And their revenues had soared from $17 billion US in 2002-03 to $59.5 billion US last year. Now today, they're sacking 6,000 workers. They've announced Australian $5.6 billion in write-down. So they're going to write this down against their profit. And you have to ask the question, will they make much of a profit at all in the current in the December half year that just passed, because they've already announced we're going to write down $5.6 billion for all these nickel plants that we built and we're now mothballing. So think about it from the Australian taxpayer's point of view, from tax revenue. BHP is going to be paying the federal government billions of dollars less in tax revenue because they might not make much of a profit at all. And the 3,500 miners and contractors who are all on an average of 100,000 plus are all suddenly out of a job. So the government's not going to be clipping their ticket for $40,000 a year each. And some of them will have to go on welfare benefits. So that's where I think BHP best demonstrates the vulnerability of Australia. When you look at the size of those profits they were making, $24 billion Australian dollars after tax last year, to now thousands of job losses, write-downs, and oil price gone from 150 to 37, and the oil was their biggest boom division for a while there. So it really is an important pointer to the challenges, and that's why Kevin Rudd and Wayne Swan are saying, you know, it's tough for the budget code, you know, we're going to be probably tens of billions of dollars into deficit by 09-10 if it doesn't turn around.
It's interesting, you know, because there is a philosophy that says out of immense breakdown comes huge possibility. And it seems today, given that we, as you have so rightly said, there's a soaring Barack Obama speech whilst the Dow Jones plummeted, that the market is finally revealing itself. We're seeing exactly what's going to happen and what we're in store for. There's no longer the hyperbole of what if, what could, perhaps, maybe, we don't know. We're actually seeing it. So we're looking underneath the petticoats and seeing the horror. And yet, at the same time, you do feel an optimism that perhaps now that we know what the problem is, we can actually tackle it. Barack Obama spoke about the risk takers, the doers, the makers of things. This is the path to redemption. I paraphrase somewhat. Stephen Mayne, but is now the time to be taking risks in business?
Well, I don't know about taking risks. We've just seen the biggest disaster from too much risk. Mm. But a lot of people have gone too far the other way. Everyone's just hoarding their cash and they're all too scared and frightened to spend. So I thought that Barack Obama's speech got it right in that it was pretty brutal on what had gone wrong. And your comment earlier about you know, good things coming from tough times, I think he's setting the scene for that. He's going to make some tough decisions. And he's going to, if he has to nationalise the banking system, he will. If he has to print money endlessly, he will. If he has to push interest rates to zero, he will. If he has to shut down huge gas-guzzling truck plants to bail out the car industry, he'll do it. And he's also going to try and balance the books over time. I mean, the Americans have just been spending like there's no tomorrow. Their budget deficit's been 2% of GDP for 40 years. $1 trillion this year. Can't go on. And I think he signaled he'll take the hard decisions. But the big thing he's got to do is just restore confidence. And I don't think there's a better personality or character out there in the world to actually do that thing of inspiring in a time of a sort of a shock on global economic activity.
So can we pick ourselves off, dust ourselves off and start all over again if we still got to fall down a little bit further?
I wouldn't be surprised if around now, particularly what happened on Wall Street last night, it finishes up being near the bottom. People will look at it and say, wow, US banks crashed like never before, literally as he was speaking. And at the end of the day, it's a confidence thing. It's a financial crisis thing. And, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't fall much further and people look back at this day and say it was the psychological turning point.
8 minutes to six. I need to tell you that tomorrow is a day of total fire ban across the entire state of Victoria. No fires in the open air tomorrow. There's a top temperature of 34 degrees forecast at this stage, but still it's a dry heat and the total fire ban has been applied. So please put your personal fire plans into place and be vigilant in all areas of your fire education. There's a good word for you. What word would you have used, Drew Morfitt? Management, fire management. Thank you, Drew Morfitt, who joins us in the studio with Stephen Mayne. Interesting.
Can I have barbecued sausages tomorrow?
No barbecued sausages. You'll have to grill them inside. Okay. I'm interested to know, Drew, how much money is spun by this event here for Victoria, these large events?
Well, just hearing, you know, the world recession and how everybody's got to tighten the belts and gas guzzlers and all that, there's a couple of things that seem to be immune from this. Golf and tennis.
Golf and tennis.
Because the Australian Open, the total player compensation at the Australian Open is $22 million. Now, the men's and women's champion, $1.6 million each. If you're knocked out in the very first round, you get $19,400, which is not bad going. $19,000 to lose in the first round. Mixed doubles is considered a social event, really. It's, you know, hit and giggle and, you know, gin and tonic at the change of ends. The winning pair, $134,000.
Wow.
For mixed doubles. And to my way of thinking, that's a lot of coin.
Yeah, but if you're the best mixed doubles pair in the world, I think I think you got to pay the best in the world properly. And tennis is great. It's the highest paying sport for women. I know some people argue that, you know, that women shouldn't be getting equal pay and we're probably the most egalitarian of the slams. What do you think, Drew?
Stop! They play best of three sets.
Just before you set a fire underneath me, come on, Drew Morfitt. Put your microphone
on. I was going to ignite this bomb closer to you signing off so you didn't have a chance to argue back.
At 4 minutes to six?
I thought I should have left it till about 90 seconds to go.
Would you like to?
Well, it's just that women's tennis is best of three, men's best of five. Mm. So a man in winning seven matches to win the title is going to be on court for hours and hours longer
than a women's match going for three. Stephen, what do you think?
Look, if you're economically rational...
They get the same prize money.
Yep.
Yeah, if you're being an economic rationalist, you can sustain the argument because you can say that the TV rights, the ratings are higher in men's matches, they don't play as long, etc., etc. But this is also about symbolism and equality. And on a day when we've got our first black American president, I think it's a great thing that women are getting the same amount as men at the Australian Open.
What would you be suggesting, Drew, that the women have to play five sets or they get paid less?
In most of the others, they get paid less.
But why would you change the winning formula? This is the best.
This is the
best event in Australia. It makes money.
And it's the most popular Grand Slam there is out of the four of them. So people love it, even though from overseas they would rather it be a little bit later, not so close to Christmas and the New Year. But it suits us perfectly because in school holidays and Australia Day and all those sort of things. But, we've led the way in making it... equal money for the men and the women. Good luck. And maybe in the year when Barack Obama has become president, we're going to see Serena or Venus win the women's singles here.
Mary Jane Fenwick, are you up for a traffic report?
I am up for a traffic report.
You should see us all in here together. We're such a happy family.
We do look like a happy family. Okay, there has been a crash on Beaconsfield Emerald Road. So it is closed between Payne Road and Home Park Roads in Beaconsfield. The crash earlier today was quite serious. So police say it will be closed until 9 p.m. tonight, not 6 p.m. as we previously reported. Also, so you know, the 5:45 Werribee train from the city was cancelled and that may be affecting you on your way home. And if you are heading out on the Monash, it's very, very busy this afternoon. From Punt Road to Jackson's Road, it's going to take you 47 minutes.
Mary Jane Fenwick, thank you so
much. Libby Gore, thank you.
It is 2:02. Let's just preview Bernard Tomic's match tonight again, Drew.
Well, he's a youngster playing in his second match on the ATP Tour. It's at night. The pressure's going to be on him. There's no doubt about that. Good luck to him. And it would be an absolute fairy tale if he were to win it tonight. But when you look at the rankings, well, he is 768 in the world. And his opponent, Muller, is 87 in the world.
It looks a bit David and Goliath from the outside.
Yeah, Gilles Muller from Luxembourg. He's 25 years of age, so he's 9 years older. He hasn't won a title either, but you just have to look at the ranking. There's 700 points difference.
In terms of what the players earn on the circuit, I mean, this boy's been signed up for a six-figure contract with Nike. He's got deals with Nokia, Garnier. What percentage of earnings comes from tournament wins and what comes from endorsements? Does anyone know this answer?
Well, it would be different for different players. Pat Rafter, what a dream sponsors product Pat Rafter is.
I was going to say what a dream he is in his underpants, because that worked well for him.
Exactly.
It was worth
winning US Opens, that was?
Yeah, it was worth. Sorry, Drew, but thank you so much for coming in to join us in the studio. Stephen Mayne, thank you for joining us in the studio.
Thanks, Libby.
It's been an afternoon of tennis, of hope, of chaos, and hopefully an upward trajectory from now on.